Hello, it's Thursday, June the 3rd. I'm Andrew Pearce, and this is The Andrew Pearce Show, and it's coming as ever from the Daily Mail newsroom. Coming up, God bless her. Her platinum jubilee, a four-day bank holiday for Her Majesty the Queen, will be the second longest-serving modern monarch. Platinum, 70 years. Andrew Lloyd Webber, powerful figure in the world of theatre, he's saying he will sue the government if theatres can't reopen without social distancing on June 21st, the so-called Freedom Day, because he says it simply won't be financially viable to do so. Knife crime in London. Even more people, young men in particular, stabbed to death in London. I'm talking to a former Metropolitan Police officer about what needs to be done. But first, the travel green list, Portugal, toppled off the list. It's gone on to amber. No new countries gone on the green list. Rumours more countries could go on the red list in the next few days. Bad news if you want to go on holiday abroad. So holiday companies, travel companies, all sorts of people are going to be very, very disappointed to learn that there are no new countries that have been added to England's green list for foreign travel today. Portugal is really the only traditional holiday spot on that list, but even Portugal is rumoured to be coming an amber country as early as next Monday. There's also strong expectation there'll be additions to the red list amid concern over a new strain called the Nepal strain, as well as the slower rollout of vaccines across Europe. Henry Smith is the Conservative MP and he's the chairman of the All-Party Future of Aviation Group. Henry Smith, very disappointing, and you wonder how much longer the aviation industry can soldier on like this.
It is very concerning, and we used to, in this country, have the world's second largest civil aviation power. But I do wonder at the ability of many of our airlines and travel companies to be able to exist into the future. And it's not just about the pleasure of going on a summer holiday. It's about us being an island trading nation, global Britain, and it's about the many millions of jobs that are involved in the aviation, travel and tourism sectors.
And you do wonder, on the front page of the Mail today, we're talking about the Nepal variant, ministers worrying about it, but there are going to be variants all the time, and they will mutate into different forms. That's what happens with a virus.
You're absolutely right. COVID-19 is a coronavirus. Flu is a coronavirus. And every year we have to have different flu boosters for the most vulnerable to protect against that. I suspect we will be living with mutations of COVID-19 for the rest of our lives. But what we have seen is that we can handle that well with a very successful vaccination program. And we really need to let that free us to get back to a much greater sense of normality. Otherwise, the impact of COVID-19 from restrictions on our economy, creating unemployment, creating poverty, the ignoring of other health conditions at the behest of COVID-19 will be a far greater impact on individuals and our society than the virus initially. So I do think we need to have a better perspective going forward as to how we now deal with COVID-19. Variants will exist, but it seems that the vaccines are effective against them, and we should really be concentrating on that with confidence.
We're just getting some breaking news, Henry Smith, that Portugal is now being moved off the green list right now. So it will be on the amber list, presumably by later today or tomorrow. Well, how do you react to that?
Well, I think that is very disappointing. If we look to some of our competitors, Germany, for example, who has a greater list of their equivalent of green countries to travel to, including, I understand, the United States, that very much puts our country at a trading disadvantage, but also very much jeopardizes those jobs that have managed to continue in the travel and aviation sectors. It really does put them at risk. And really what I would say is to allow the aviation and travel sectors to recover over this summer will mean that they won't have to come to the government seeking bailouts in the coming winter months. Really, we need to let the industry recover itself. And these sorts of restrictions are really a hammer blow to that.
Just finally, Henry, it's not just, of course, is it, the airlines? We're thinking Virgin, EasyJet, Ryanair. Heathrow Airport's economy supports 70,000 jobs approximately. Many of those jobs will be imperiled if we don't start getting flights going again.
You're absolutely right. International travel and aviation is key to our economy. I represent an aviation community with Gatwick Airport, and that, of course, has a knock-on effect to the wider economy. So does ourselves as an international trading nation. If we have that ability to trade restricted, then that affects all of our economies. So it's not just direct jobs in the aviation and travel sectors, but it is the wider economy that starts to suffer. And I think the detrimental effects of that, I hope I'm wrong on this, but in the medium to long term, I think will be far worse for our society, the wealth of our economy, and therefore our ability to be able to fund the sort of world-class public services that we want.
Absolutely. That's Henry Smith. He's the Conservative MP and Chairman of the All-Party Future of Aviation Group. Thanks for joining us. Visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our other podcasts and our video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. London has seen another surge in violent incidents over the last few days. Several people have been stabbed to death. Four people were rushed to hospital last night alone as a result of gun and knife wounds. Is this an unusual level of violence for the capital? What can be done to stop it? I'm joined now by Norman Brennan, who is a Metropolitan Police Officer for 31 years, and he is the director of the Law and Order Foundation. Norman Brennan, Sadiq Khan has just been re-elected. He didn't have, as Mayor of London, he didn't have a particularly marvellous majority. Knife crime, in my view, was the issue that never really took off in that mayoral campaign, and it should have.
Absolutely. Under Sadiq Khan, although he's not responsible for crime, London has become lawless, and it's not just London, it's other cities around Britain and even towns and villages. Carrying knives by some use now has become as routine as carrying a mobile phone. And I'm afraid Sadiq Khan has not got a clue on what to do. He's not an ideas man. He's got his certain policies he follows through. None of them really affect law and order. And he's not a friend of the Metropolitan Police, which is very sad. And as I say, he's clueless. He hasn't got a clue on what to do. In one of Britain's leading law and order campaigners, I actually predicted knife crime getting out of control way back when I was a serving police officer in 2003. In fact, the date was the 13th of December 2004, to be precise. Nobody listened, and I predicted a knife epidemic. Well, that's what we've got, and we haven't got the police to deal with it, and the criminal justice system is on its knees. So I'm afraid we're looking really anarchy on the streets of Britain.
Where are they getting these knives from? I mean, are they just literally going into the kitchen drawer and pinching mum or dad's carving knife, or are they buying them in supermarkets? I mean, is there any way that restrictions can be imposed on the sale of arms? Because as you know, Norman, often some of the people who are arrested and charged, they're under the age of 16.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you want to get a knife, Andrew, you're going to get a knife. Yes, you can get it from the kitchen drawer. You can buy it off the internet. There's no real checks about what your age is. And don't forget, many of these youngsters, sadly, are involved in gangs. The gangs are often up to 100 in number. There are about 4,200 gangs throughout Britain, just over 200 in London, and many of their members will be over the age of 18, so they can buy knives at will. And when you look at knives amnesties, well, knives amnesties by the police and by the government are no more than a public relations exercise, because the people we want knives from are those that carry it for crime, self-defence, and as a fashion accessory. So in knives amnesties, they're the ones that don't hand the knives in. They carry on carrying the knives during knives amnesties, and afterwards they've still got the knives. So, as I said, no more than a public relations exercise, and I don't think the public are being fooled anymore. You rightly introduced this item on the dreadful murders this week and stabbings and shootings, often by children on other children.
Yeah. And Norman, if I had a Labour politician here, they'd say, oh, well, police numbers have been cut. We know that. Now, the government is slowly but surely getting the police numbers back, but it takes a long time to train a police officer and to be an experienced police officer. But they always say to me, the cuts in youth clubs, that's been a big part of the problem. Now, look, you were on the street for 31 years in London. What is the truth about that? Do youth clubs and community facilities make a big difference?
Absolutely. It gives youngsters a focal point. It gives them a purpose and a focus in life. You know, to go and mix in with like-minded people. I was at a youth club when I was a youngster, and it just gave you that opportunity once or sometimes twice a week to go somewhere and interact with other people. You can do judo, you can do music, all sorts of sports, and most of those have closed down. And you rightly introduced the number of police officers lost. We've lost nearly 22,000 police officers in the past decade.
Shocking.
We actually need another 10 or 20,000 on top of that. And another thing, Andrew, which coexists with youth clubs, is that I recall when I joined the job, and even before I joined the job in 1978, many beat officers knew all the kids on the streets. They would interact with them, and they would see the ones that were sometimes without a father, very rare in those days, but more often so nowadays, and they would take that person aside and spend a bit of time with them. Even officers would go to youth clubs in their off-duty hours interacting, because that's what police officers do. They care about the community, and I'm not interested in all of those critics that criticise the police, thinking that police officers are put on the streets to persecute black people or to persecute motorists. That's a very small part of their job. What police officers want to do is interact with the public, interact with the youth. And I'm afraid we've got a belligerence nowadays by society who know all of their rights, very little responsibilities. And the saddest thing of all, Andrew, is some of these children, talking about youth centres, have got no value of life. They've got no value of their own or others. And as we can see, almost on a daily basis, they're changing other children's lives through gunshot wounds and knife wounds. And tragically, more parents now are planning funerals rather than futures for their children. When did that ever become acceptable?
Quite right, too. That's Norman Brennan, a former Met police officer of 31 years standing, and he's the director of the Law and Order Foundation. Thanks for joining us. Now, visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, our videos, our opinion pieces and more. If you want to get in touch, tweet us at mailplus or me at Tory Boy Pierce. Andrew Lloyd Webber has threatened to sue the government, no less, if theatres are not fully reopened from June 21st. He says the delay to reopening would be the final death knell for theatres. Of course, indoor entertainment venues were able to reopen on May the 17th, but the majority of theatres, especially in London's West End and some of our major towns and cities, have remained shut as it's not profitable to play to smaller audiences because social distancing is still in effect. Alistair Smith is the editor of The Stage, the world's oldest theatre publication, and joins us now. Alistair, pretty strong words from Andrew Lloyd Webber. He's one of our best-known, most successful theatre impresarios and composers. What do you make of this?
Well, Andrew Lloyd Webber knows what he's talking about. It would be very serious for the theatre industry were it not to be able to go up to 100% capacity, albeit, you know, likely with other safety measures in place from June the 21st. That's the plan that everyone has been working towards. And I suspect that were that not to be possible, there would be a number of shows that are planning to open then or soon after who would not be able to open.
Yeah, and there was a survey done of 944 theatre venues, 186 theatre venues answering questions about financial loss have reported losses of over £1 million each. Some have lost even more. Now, people like Andrew Lloyd Webber, of course, Alistair, have deep pockets. So does Cameron McIntosh. But they can't all be deep pockets. And some theatres, particularly smaller provincial theatres, are really having a hard time now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been devastating for the whole sector. And I mean, even someone like Andrew Lloyd Webber, who as you said, does have deep pockets, you know, he will have lost many, many millions over this period. And so, you know, anyone, no matter how financially secure they were going into this in the theatre sector, is going to be really feeling the pinch at the moment. And, you know, everyone is banking on the idea that they can open back up to full audiences at some point relatively soon. A few of them have already opened, as you said earlier,
but I think
that's very much a stopgap measure and, as you said, doesn't work commercially. either they're losing money on it or they're being subsidised by the government to operate at reduced capacity.
And of course, he's got his own musical. He wants to open Cinderella at the Gillian Lynn Theatre in the West End next month. Now, he says if it's what it takes, he will ask theatre goers to wear face coverings in the auditorium. And I'm a great theatre goer, Alistair. I've already thought I don't mind wearing a mask in the theatre if it means I can get to the theatre. I don't mind carrying on wearing a mask on public transport either if it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've been four times in the past week to the theatre and worn a mask on all occasions throughout the shows, and everyone around me was doing the same and abiding by the rules. And it's not ideal, but I think it's something that theatre goers, at least in the short to medium term, would be willing to put up with if necessary, so that they can carry on going to the theatre. I think it's a small inconvenience in the grand scheme of things.
He also, just finally, as he pointed to the success, didn't he, Lloyd Webber, of the government's indoor events trials. So the Brit Awards at the O2, I think there were 4,000 people at that. There might have been even more at the snooker championships at the Crucible in Sheffield. Neither of those big mass events reported any perceptible spike in COVID transmission or infections.
Yeah, and I think that's where his frustration comes from what I've read, is that if we were not to be able to go up to full capacity from June 21st, it doesn't appear like there's any science that would currently support that as a rational decision. All of the pilot events seem to have gone very well. Theatres are very controlled environments where people tend to be, sitting facing away from each other, and obviously wearing masks. It's not like a club or even a pub. It's a much more controlled environment where you know everyone's sitting, so it's much better for track and trace as well. So I think the feeling is that were the government to go back on that when it comes to theatre, having done these pilot test events, that would be, I think, to put it mildly, disappointing.
Very interesting. That's Alistair Smith, who's the editor of The Stage. Thanks for joining us. Now it's time for our regular city update with Ruth Sunderland, business editor at the Daily Mail. The other day we had great news for you because Domino Pizzas were creating 5,000 new jobs. Today, not so good. Petrol prices at the highest for 2 years. And this comes as we know the government is increasingly worried about inflation getting back into the system. Ruth Sunderland, business editor at the Daily Mail, joins me now. Ruth, petrol prices are a very totemic issue, particularly for the Tory party. There's always great pressure on the Chancellor not to raise the duty level in his budgets. Where are we now with petrol prices?
Petrol prices now, the average cost of a litre of petrol has gone up to just over 129 pence. Now, that's the highest it's been since August of last year. The cost of a litre of unleaded is 22p more than a year ago. So this is the biggest increase we've seen for quite a long time. It adds up to around £8 more. It's a lot of money for a full tank of petrol than it was a few months ago. You know, it's a lot of money out of a tight budget. It makes me think, you know, my husband laughs at me because I drive a little Fiat 500, which he seems to think is quite funny for some reason. It makes me quite thankful I do, because it doesn't use very much petrol. So, if you're driving every day for work, or you have a job maybe that demands a lot of driving, or you're ferrying kids about, that's a lot of money, isn't it, on a tight budget?
And of course it comes, Ruth, as the lockdown is being lifted, more and more people are going back to work. You can see the roads wherever you are in whatever part of the country. They are much busier. There's no prospect. The budget has been and gone. So the pressure presumably on prices will continue upwards. Why is it going up?
Yeah, so it's going up because the price of oil has been going up. So, there is a linkage there. Unfortunately, what tends to happen is when the price of oil goes up, petrol prices at the pump rocket up. When the price of oil goes down, they go down rather more slowly. So it's a rocket and a feather, if you like, is a good analogy. Now, it's notoriously hard to predict fuel prices more than a few weeks ahead of time. And the pandemic, of course, has thrown another, I don't want to make a motoring pun, but a spanner in the works, really.
Yes, of course.
because, you know, that's altered the dynamics of fuel retailing and also changed people's driving habits. Now, I think what's key here is that retailers of petrol should not be taking advantage of drivers, because we're at a pivotal point for the economy here. You're absolutely right. We can't afford inflation to start taking off again. We're at the point where people are just getting back into normal life. The economy is taking, gathering pace again. I think the point is that petrol retailers need to be responsible. They shouldn't be putting up prices so much that it puts the brake on the recovery. I'm sorry for another motoring pun there, Andrew. I just can't help myself today.
It works, though. But Ruth, just finally, one person who might be smiling a little about this is, of course, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, because higher petrol prices means more revenue for the Exchequer.
It does, but I think I don't think Rishi will be getting carried away with that. I think, you know, if petrol prices are too high, it'll mean that he'll miss out on other tax revenues elsewhere. For example, if petrol prices rocket up, it's going to put people off taking their car on a staycation, which is what we've all got to do, really, because we're finding it difficult to travel abroad. I think it'll also hold back the wider opening up of the economy, which, of course, the quicker the economy opens up, the quicker Rishi's tax coffers start to fill up. So I don't think he's going to be that keen on retailers ratcheting prices up. And of course, there is always inflation as well, as you mentioned at the beginning. And really, that's the last thing that Rishi wants.
All right. That's Ruth Sunderland, who's the business editor at the Daily Mail. Thanks for joining us. Well, now for a bit of very good news. We're going to be getting 4 days off next summer to mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. The day will mark the 70 years that Her Majesty has been on the throne. She will be the longest serving monarchs of all time anywhere in the world, and certainly the longest in Britain and the Commonwealth. I'm delighted to say Victoria Murphy, royal author and writer for Town and Country magazine, is with us. Victoria, this will all have been cleared by the palace. What are we going to expect?
Yeah, that's right. So they've announced pretty much exactly a year in advance what we're going to expect next summer, which is the focal point of what will be a year-long sort of marking the Platinum Jubilee, because obviously she reaches those 70 years on the 6th of February next year. But as with the Diamond Jubilee, the summer, the June weekend is going to be the focal point of the celebrations. And actually, I remember covering the Diamond Jubilee, and the events that we are going to see over this weekend next year are actually very similar to that weekend back in 2012. We've got, starting on the Thursday, we've got a Trooping the Colour, a special birthday parade for the Queen. And then in the afternoon, we're also going to see beacons begin to be lit in a sort of chain across the UK and the Commonwealth. And the Friday, there's a slightly more contemplative day. Everyone obviously will have a day off. The Queen will be attending the service of Thanksgiving at St Paul's Cathedral. And then on the Saturday, she's going to be at the Epsom Derby. She does attend the Derby every year. It's a really important event in her calendar. But this is going to be a sort of a big, a special extra significance, because she'll be attending on this Jubilee weekend. And then the evening, the BBC is going to be staging and hosting a concert at Buckingham Palace. It's a sort of party at the palace type event with live music, and members of the public will be able to attend that. There's going to be some kind of ballot where people can get involved and try and get a ticket for that. And then finally on the Sunday, we've got the big Jubilee lunch, which they remember again from 10 years ago, which is where people are invited to have a picnic, have a street party, get together with their friends and neighbours. And then finally, there's going to be a pageant going past Buckingham Palace. Now, you may remember in 2012, there was a river pageant. So there's not going to be any boats involved this time.
Prince Philip, they got very cold, didn't they? And Prince Philip ended up in hospital, poor thing.
He did, exactly. And he missed the rest of the celebrations. And the Queen's cousin, Margaret Rhodes, actually said ahead of it, she said, "Oh, I think she slightly dreads the ship thing." So there's not going to be any ships this time round. It's going to be a pageant of around 5,000 people that goes past Buckingham Palace and in the surrounding streets. So very much on the land this time around, but a similar kind of idea, a similar kind of theme, celebrating culture, music. There'll be lots of different elements to that. So that's it. So I think, a lot to look forward to there.
And will she say anything herself, Victoria, or will she just let all these events go on around her?
I think if you look, you know, with the Queen, with the royal family, but with the Queen in particular, looking to sort of history gives us a very good idea of what might happen. And she did say a few words following the Diamond Jubilee celebration. So I would expect that we might see her say something or at least issue some kind of message around this time. But obviously, she's also going to be very visible throughout the 4 days, because we're going to see her on each of these days attending, observing these different celebratory events. So the Queen and all the royals will be very visible over this weekend.
And I wonder, dare I bring him into the conversation, will we see anything of Prince Andrew, who, of course, we know has retired from public life or been retired from public life? And what about Prince Harry?
It's a very good question. I mean, exactly what members of the royal family are attending, what events, I think remains to be seen. You know, with Prince Andrew, when he stepped back from public life, we were told that he would still attend events with the family. But since then, he actually hasn't appeared at a lot of things that we might have expected to see him at. And he didn't appear in his own daughter's wedding photographs. You may, of course, remember from last year. So whether or not he will appear, I think it's a difficult one, but I would expect probably yes, but I don't think that we can know for sure exactly what family members will be appearing at what. And on Prince Harry, you know, again, when Harry and Meghan decided to step back and decided to go to California, they did say that they would still be at family events. That was, trooping was an example of something that was given, that they would very much be at these family events, still there, of course, still part of the family. And the Queen really emphasised that in the messages that she released when they made the decision to leave. And so I would think yes, but obviously, you know, with Harry and Meghan, we've seen over the last year that a lot can happen and it's difficult to be certain. You know, these disagreements with the family do run deep. So I would be hopeful that we would see attendance, but it's early to call sort of things like that at this stage, I think.
You never know how many more interviews he's going to give to Oprah Winfrey.
Well, quite.
Indeed. That's Victoria Murphy, royal author and writer for Town & Country magazine. Thanks for joining us. Well, that's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, why don't you download the Mail Plus app? Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great evening and good night.